Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. And we'll continue now with our three-part look at religious persecution around the world. On yesterday's show, we marked the first day of Hanukkah by discussing the spike in overt acts of anti-Semitism the last few years. Tomorrow, we'll talk about Islamophobia in 2018. And right now, in this Christmas season, no, we won't talk about the fake war on Christmas that Trump and some radio hosts like to pretend is a thing in this country, just because people say holidays, happy holidays, out of respect to the Jews. But we will talk about the persecution of Christians in the birthplace of Christianity, the Middle East. With me now is Janine DiGiovanni, Senior Fellow at Yale University's Jackson Institute for Global Affairs and author of books including The Morning They Came for Us, Dispatches from Syria. She's been tracking the fate of Christians in Iraq in particular since the late dictator Saddam Hussein was in power. His rule was from 1979 until the Iraq War in 2003. And DiGiovanni has an article in this month's Harper's called The Vanishing, The Plight of Christians in an Age of Intolerance. Janine DiGiovanni, thank you so much for coming on the show. Welcome to WNYC. Can you hear us, Ms. DiGiovanni? I think the guest can't hear me. Or maybe we can't hear her. Hi.
I can hear you.
Oh, now we've got you. Thank you very much for coming on. Sorry about the technical glitch. What first got you interested in tracking the fate of Christians in Iraq?
Well, back in the Saddam days, what interested me the most was how minorities tended to back dictators, less out of their true political beliefs, but more as a way of seeking protection. So I started traveling around Iraq in 2002, right before the invasion, visiting these small communities that I believed were going to be more and more facing extinction. The Yazidis, who are not Christians, but among them also the Christians of northern Iraq, the Nineveh Plain. I think what really fascinated me the most about them is what ancient people they were. I mean, this is where the Old Testament prophets roamed. They go back to the first century. So tracking them and seeing how they fared through the Saddam era, but also through the insurgents, the American, the U.S.-led occupation, and now the Islamic State, seeing how their figures fluctuate, how many of them are emigrating, and the challenges they're facing.
So let's go through some of that. Like, ironically, Saddam Hussein, mass murderer though he was, protected the Christian minority to some degree, and they prospered, you tell us, because his group was a minority too, the Sunnis in Iraq. Can you tell that story a little bit?
Well, it's not as much that they really backed him and believed in him, it's more that they felt incredibly vulnerable. And by aligning themselves with Saddam, which, by the way, is what the cops in Egypt do as well with Sisi, it's what, traditionally minorities have tended to seek the mantle, to seek the protection of these horrific dictators. And so Saddam basically left them alone. And they could go about their lives. It wasn't that they were integrated into society, say, the way that Lebanese Christians are or Jordanian Christians, but that they could be left alone. Once Saddam fell, they were in a very precarious position, particularly with the rise of Islamic fundamentalist groups who actively called out for them to be subjugated, for them to be killed, for them to be made extinct. And, you know, the worst of it was the 2014 invasion of the Islamic State into Mosul, because the Nineveh Plain is very much, you know, in that surrounding area, and that's where the majority of them live, the Assyrians anyway.
And so you're right about the... Sorry about that. Just swallowed the wrong way. And you write about the Ottoman Empire and World War One contributing to the first wave of brutal persecution in modern Christian history, and the U.S. invasion of Iraq in 2003, which you just referenced, launching the second one. That's quite a comparison over the sweep of history. Why do you compare the U.S. invasion of Iraq today? I mean, George W. Bush was a born-again Christian who even one time called his war a crusade, though he didn't mean it literally. Do you think it had unintended consequences as far as George W. Bush was concerned with respect to Christians in the region?
I'm more worried now about Mike Pence and the repercussions of, I mean, we can get into this later, but I don't think the invasion in 2003 was a crusade. I think there were other factors that loomed and that led to that disastrous event. And of course, what came after it, because that directly led to the rise of the Islamic State, the rise of Al-Qaeda in Iraq, and I believe as well to the disintegration of what's happening in Syria now. So I think that the real issue for the Christians right now is they're trying to recover from the trauma of the Islamic State kicking them out of their villages and burning down their houses and killing them. But it's also they're facing immigration. They have no economic prospects there. And the Archbishop of Canterbury, Justin Welby, said just a few days ago that this is basically the worst attacks since the Mughals in the 13th century, and that there are daily murders. So I think when other Christians hear about this, they want to leave. There's no reason for them to stay now. There's not a lot of work for the youth. It's a bleak future. And yet, at the same time, they're very aware, painfully aware, that they're in the cradle of their civilization. And if they go, they're abandoning this land, which is so important to them. But, you know, they're a dwindling population now. We don't really even know the numbers, but roughly about 2003, we believe there was about 1.5 million Christians in Iraq. And now it's roughly half that.
And much of your article in Harper's is about what ISIS has done to Christian communities in Iraq and Syria, trying to either subjugate them in places like Mosul in northern Iraq or drive them away from their traditional lands, as you were just describing. But we also keep hearing that ISIS has been defeated in Syria and especially Iraq. Is that horror show over in a way that would allow Christians to now go home again?
Well, I personally believe that ISIS is not over. I think Raqqa has been defeated. I think Mosul has been defeated. But I believe that they are rebranding and regrouping and recruiting. Recruitment is down, but you are always going to find... I lived in France for many, many years, and the level of recruitment amongst the disenfranchised youth, because there are very little opportunities, look what's happening in France over the past few days, was to me a real signal of how strong the Islamic State was and is, and I think will be again. Their villages were destroyed, most of them. They are being rebuilt, but there's a lingering fear. I mean, it was only 4 years ago. So if you go back to a home where you had been basically driven out of because of your faith, and you had been an internally displaced person roaming around trying to find some kind of sanctuary, and then also you're witnessing killings in other parts of the Middle East, the Copts in Egypt, Palestinian Christians who are being driven out of Gaza, the Gaza Strip, because of Hamas. It's frightening for them. And so the people that I spoke to, there's a real sense of it's a deep fear that they will have to emigrate. And if that happens, they'll intermarry and they'll basically lose the position that they've had of this ancient faith. Right before, like literally a few months before the American invasion in 2003, I was in Mosul. I had gotten permission from the Saddam regime, which was not easy in those days, because as reporters, we were followed everywhere by the Mukhabarat, the secret police. But I got permission to go to Mosul, and I went to a mass, a special mass, which was for Saint Therese of Lisieux, who is a Catholic saint. And all around me, it was incredibly moving because the Assyrian Christians speak Aramaic, which is the language of Christ. And it's a very beautiful, ancient language. And they were chanting and they were praying, but they were also crying. And they were so frightened, and they would grab my hand and basically say, you know, what's going to happen to us? What's going to happen to us? They could foresee that Saddam was going to fall and that their protection, even if it was a rather blinded protection, was going to slip away from them. And so now they're in a really difficult position, because while their leaders, their archbishops and their bishops and their priests tell them they have to stay, at the same time they feel, well, how can I as a leader tell them to stay when we know they could very well be killed? So it's a very bleak prognosis.
My guest, if you're just joining us, is Janine DiGiovanni, senior fellow at Yale's Jackson Institute for Global Affairs and author of books including The Morning They Came for Us, Dispatches from Syria. Her article in this month's Harper's is called The Vanishing, The Plight of Christians in an Age of Intolerance. And we can take your phone calls for her. Does anyone have a connection to any Christians from that part of the Middle East and want to help tell this story? Or just any questions, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. You mentioned Mike Pence, and you cite a speech in the article given by our very identified Christian vice president, who calls himself a Christian first, conservative second, and Republican third. Never mind he doesn't put human being or American in his top three identities, apparently. But here's a few seconds of a speech Pence gave that you cite in your article at something called the In Defense of Christians Solidarity Dinner.
The president asked me to be here tonight because we both believe, along with all of you, that American leadership is crucial to securing the future of Christians in the Middle East and to protecting all who are persecuted across the wider world. And under the leadership of President Donald Trump, I can assure you, the United States of America will always stand with those who suffer for their faith, and we will always support them in their hour of need.
So, Janine, I think we can say half the vice president's words were true there and half were not. Do you know what I'm getting at?
Well, what struck me there is we can support those who suffer for their faith, but you could say the same thing about Muslim refugees who do not get the same kind of treatment that Christian refugees do. I was very worried while I was researching this piece that while I wanted my Christian friends in the Middle East who were suffering so much to be able to find refuge in Canada or the U.S. or Germany or Sweden, wherever they could get into, I thought it was sending a very bad message to say we accept Christian refugees, but we don't want Muslim refugees. So we have good refugees and we have bad refugees. And in fact, even the Archbishop of Canterbury recently in Britain, it was 1 in 400 refugees are Syrian refugees are Christians, and they wanted to change that figure. That worries me, because to me, having worked with refugees for almost all of my career, 30 years of being a foreign correspondent, I don't differentiate whether they're Christian or they're Jewish or they're Muslim or they're Druze. People who are refugees are people who are escaping something horrific, some kind of massive intolerance or war, and they are running away from something, and they need to be protected. So I worry about Pence's words and his his fierce drive on this issue. I was told last year that this was going to be one of his passions, the plight of Christians in the Middle East. So on one hand, I'm glad that the White House is paying attention to something, but on the other hand, I worry that it sends out the wrong message.
And thinking about how sort of pro-Christian refugee and anti-Muslim refugee the Trump administration is, your mindset is clearly that all people from all religions facing persecution in the world should stand in solidarity with all the others. But as Trump and Pence demonstrate, and frankly, so do many Muslims and many Jews and many other Christians, people often see it as a zero-sum game, no?
Well, as you were speaking, I couldn't help but have the images of the Rohingya Muslims flash through my mind, you know, which is basically a refugee crisis that's largely ignored, I think.
And perpetrated by Buddhists. Whoever thinks of them as religious persecutors.
Exactly. Because we have the image of, well, of course, now we know the true story about Aung San Suu Kyi, that she could have done so much more to protect the Rohingyas. But I think, yes, I mean, getting back to the core of your question, I absolutely, people who are refugees, in my view, and I would love to say this to President Trump, refugees do not want to leave their homes. And I've experienced this from the beginning of working in Bosnia, Bosnian refugees, Kosovo refugees, Sierra Leone refugees, all over Africa, all over the Middle East. I worked for the UN Refugee Agency for a year with Syrian refugees, and they don't want to leave. They don't want to tear up their roots. They don't want to leave the place where their children were born, where their ancestors were born, where they were married, where they have pets, where they have a life. They're not desperate to come to the U.S. and take our jobs. They're running away from something horrible, from murder and mass rape and torture and incarceration. And, you know, as a Christian myself, I mean, I was brought up as a Roman Catholic, but I feel that we are meant to, as a human being, we're meant to protect other human beings who are weaker and more vulnerable. And the Muslim ban and the embracing of Christian refugees worries me. I'll be very frank. It does.
My guest is Janine DiGiovanni. Her article in Harper's is The Vanishing, The Plight of Christians in an Age of Intolerance. And Marion in Hackettstown, you're on WNYC. Hello, Marion.
Hi. I just wanted to let you know I'm actually Iraqi-American. I still have lots of relatives who live in Iraq. We were mostly originally from Baghdad, although over the last few years they've been leaving because of all the violence there. My older relatives have just gone north, and my cousins who are my age are trying to leave the country because, as you're saying, there's no work. But the biggest factor for them is they have no protections. They are always living in fear. Any exchanges that they have, you know, my aunts just sold their home and they got a lot of money stolen from them in the transaction, and they're basically told, yeah, what are you going to do about it? You know, you're Christians, you have no power, you know, you're going to be quiet or you're going to get hurt and go away. So they just live trying to stay under the radar and out of anyone's view, just because they have no control, they have no protections, they have, you know, no rules over there. It's almost kind of like the Wild West for them.
Janine, anything you want to say to Marion or ask her?
Absolutely. And it's interesting, Marion, that you pointed out about the extortion, the tax. During the time of the Islamic State, they would give Christians an option. They could either convert or they would pay a jizya, which is basically an extortion tax. And I tried to get the figures out of how much people had to pay, and some families, it would be a couple $100s. One woman told me it was $8,000. And basically, they had absolutely no choice. And the other thing that really alarmed me was that the Islamic State would paint big N's over their doors, which means Nazarene Christians. And this had horrible, for me, a deja vu of Jews being forced to wear yellow stars during the Nazi era. And I just feel, I think you're absolutely right. I think that there's two things driving the Christians in northern Iraq and your family there. The first is their fear that the Islamic State or another group will come back and do the same thing to them, and that they are literally powerless. And the second is that they have no economic prospects.
Yeah, I just want to point out, as far as their day-to-day fears, it's not the quote-unquote Islamic State. They don't really distinguish between this person is harassing me and they're a member of an Islamic State versus that person who's not. They just know that Muslims are in power, there's all kinds of chaos going on, and they are exposed as victims, you know, to the point where if they go out to the market and they are not wearing the abaya, right, then they are highlighting the fact that they're Christians. So even though they're Christian, when they go out in public, they cover themselves as if they weren't, just to blend in. So it's a little less obvious Islamic State's taking over, and it's just more there's rampant violence, there's no control, and Christians are targets.
Also, there's the fact that they're in northern Iraq, Kurdistan, and they're worried that they're getting caught in the political turmoil, because of course there's an ongoing issue between Baghdad and Kurdistan. You know, will Kurdistan become its own entity or not? And a lot of the Christians told me that they were worried about that. I mean, they're going to get caught up in the fracas between the two of them. So yes, a lot of concerns.
Mary, and good luck to you and your family. Thank you for calling. Chris in the Bronx, you're on WNYC. Hi, Chris.
Yeah, hi, Brian. Thanks for calling on me. My question is, I'd like the guests to get into what's going on with the Palestinian Christians a little bit more. I have family that goes out to Israel a lot, and it's kind of an issue that I pay close attention to. I also read a lot about it, and from what I've seen and from what I've been told, the Palestinian Christians and Muslims are in complete solidarity with each other under the oppression that they are getting from the State of Israel. So I guess I'd like your guests to talk a little bit more about the oppression that the Palestinian Christians are receiving from Israel.
Palestinian Christians, like all Palestinians, are basically subjugated to the same restrictions that, you know, Muslim Palestinians are. I've worked for many, many years in Palestine and Israel, and, you know, this is a whole other topic that I don't think we want to get into right now, but I can talk about what's happening in Gaza, where, you know, at one point, Palestinian Christians are basically a mix of Eastern Orthodox, Lutherans, Catholics, Protestants, and there were a large number of them were expelled in 1948 during the creation of the State of Israel. We reckon, again, like numbers are very dodgy, we can't really get, but in 1922, which was of course after the breakup of the Ottoman Empire, there was about 70,000. Now, it's probably about half that. There were 3,000 in the Gaza Strip, which seems like a lot, but then if you've been to the Gaza Strip, you know how absolutely concentrated, how stifling it is. They are being driven out bit by bit by Hamas, who, of course, won in the elections and have basically, you know, made their lives pretty intolerable. And the real hardship is then they go to Israel, the West Bank, and life is not a bed of roses there either, to put it mildly. So the plight of the Palestinian Christians is very precarious, and of course they have been there since before the time of Christ in Galilee, in the north, but also in Gaza as well, Bethlehem, of course.
Is your take on the Hamas aspect of that in addition to wanting to stand with all Palestinians against Israel, that Hamas also, as an Islamist group, wants to drive out Christians because there's a Christian-Muslim rivalry there?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And again, like similar to, although Hamas doesn't really have the same agenda as the Islamic State, it is a matter of intolerance. You know, you're either a believer or you're not a believer. I mean, the Islamic State equally had, intolerance towards Shias, who they would see as non-believers as well. So I think the pattern here for me is there is this general sense of vast intolerance in a time when under dictators, these people could live, could worship without the fear of their churches being blown up. And in Gaza, the last bookstore was run by a man who was a Lutheran, and he was burned out of it. It was about 4 years ago, I think. So that's a place that is really suffering, Gaza, because it is such a small place, because there was such a small population, and because unlike Christians in in Lebanon or Jordan, they're absolutely in no way integrated into society.
We have time for one more call. Mercedes in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Mercedes.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I was just wondering, as I'm listening to the discussion, about why there is such a difference between the treatment of people seeking refuge from Central and South America, as well as Black Africans who are Christians, who the United States and other countries sent missionaries over there to Christianize them. Why is there such a difference when these people are seeking refuge for the same reasons as those over in Europe and Northern Africa and other places? Could you explain that?
It's a great question, first of all. And we never hear about the Central American refugees, for example, who Mercedes mentions, as Christians. They're only Central Americans. Now, of course, it's not the same as the situation you're describing in Syria and Iraq, where they're being persecuted on the basis of being Christians by a Muslim majority in the Middle East sense, or the Middle East context. But one might think that there could be an appeal to the Bush administration based on the common Christianity of people from Central America and the majority in this country, but we never hear it.
No, absolutely. Mercedes, it is a great question, and I absolutely hear you. And I do think that people coming from Central America, even though they are fleeing, some of them Guatemalans and Hondurans who are fleeing horrific, horrific regimes and repression in their own country, are sort of seen as a kind of an abyss of a large group of people coming, and they're not singled out because of religion. And in a sense, too, Syrians, when they come to Europe, when they were coming to Europe, Syrian refugees, they weren't singled out as much either as Christians. It was more, here are these Syrians coming, they're going to take our jobs, they're going to rape our children. I think in general, we need much more awareness about the plight of people who flee their countries. And in terms of the African Catholics, it depends. I mean, there is a difference between migrants and refugees. I mean, refugees technically, under the international conventions, are those who are fleeing active war zones, right? So migrants are seen usually as those who are coming because they want a better future. They're fleeing mm-hmm. for economic reasons.
And we have 30 seconds left. Go ahead.
So, yes, sorry, I just wanted to make that point. Not everyone is a refugee. You know, you're a refugee really when you're technically when you're fleeing, you're seeking political asylum, or you're seeking safety from a very dangerous place.
Janine DiGiovanni's article in Harper's is called The Vanishing, The Plight of Christians in an Age of Intolerance. Thank you so much for your work and for coming on.
Thank you, Brian. Thank you very much.
And after talking about anti-Semitism yesterday and intolerance against Christians today, we'll talk on tomorrow's show about Islamophobia 2018. But coming up right after this break, we'll talk about the 10 things that scare you most.